The views and opinions expressed by any hosts or guests of WJMS Radio do not reflect the beliefs of its owners or associates. No liability, explicit or implied, shall be extended to WJMS Radio or the show hosts whose words, advice, and or opinions appear from or on our website or on air.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9.
Are we on the air?
You're listening to WJMSradio.com.
Jam.
This chick is a sick individual.
You're tuned in to Sound Off with your girl Jams right here on WJMSradio.com.
There is no competition.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Sound Off right here on WJMS Radio. This is your girl, Jams. I am so excited to be with you guys today. It's been a while. It's been quite a while, actually. It feels good to be back on the platform here and on the show. I am excited. This is going to be the first of many segments that I'm doing back on Sound Off now. I know I was a little bit away for a while there, just focusing on life and things that are going on, but I am back and I am ready to give Sound Off some more episodes because there's a lot going on and there's a lot that needs to be talked about. There's a lot of things happening in the world, and now more than ever, I need to be using this platform to talk about them. So I am going to be back on Sound Off and I am going to be better than ever. For starters, we got this brand new studio platform software, which is really great. I'm so excited about this. I'm always excited about new software. I say it all the time that it feels like internet radio and podcasting is evolving faster than the technology to support us. And I feel like we finally got a little bit of broadcasting or streaming software that seems to be working and seems to have filled a couple of voids, which is great. So I'm excited to be here today. If you want to engage with the show, of course, you can check us out on social media. We're at WJMS Radio on Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, and Twitter. The show Sound Off has a page on Facebook. You can just check out WJMS Sound Off if you want to follow there as well. And of course, I welcome all your comments, suggestions, ideas, and of course, guests. So please feel free to reach out to me if you have something that you want to talk about. So today's episode is a very special episode. I have somebody near and dear to my heart. You should all recognize him as, you know, number one fan, Monday night show host, you know, dad extraordinaire. I have Steve Bowles with me, and he is, of course, my father. But not only just that, he's a wonderful host here on the station, and he is going to talk to us today about caring for your parents. There's one thing that him and I have been chatting about recently a lot, and that is caring for elderly parents. And that means, you know, nursing homes and, you know, taking care of their finances and all that kind of stuff. And when I was talking to him, I realized there is a lot that goes into this. And I don't think it's something that anybody in my generation is really thinking about. And it's something that we need to start thinking about and we should be planning for if we want to make sure that our darling parents are taken care of and not living out in a cardboard box on the street. And so today I thought maybe he could come on to the show today and just chat with me a little bit about, you know, what are some of the things that go into caring for your elderly parents, things that we're not thinking about at our age because we're just like, oh, mom and dad are fine. And some of the things that we can start to do now just in preparation for when those days actually come. So, Steve, Dad, welcome to the show. Thanks for being with me today. How you doing?
Jamie, daughter, I'm doing great.
Yep.
Now you see where her irreverence comes from, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah, this has been quite a journey, you know, and it's amazing that what you said about something that young people aren't thinking about is actually really the case. You know, truth be told, you know, we do think our parents are going to kind of live forever. The idea that, you know, they're going to need a level of care that is and can be, you know, very consuming on your life is not something that people think about, particularly young people, you know, and even, you know, even the parents as well. You know, I know we're going to go through a whole range of things, but to kind of give the bottom tagline at the top, I've learned some things about what I need to do for myself and, you know, by extension, what I need to work with you and your brother and sister in preparing for that eventuality, just based on what I've learned in going through this.
Yeah. And I know that one of the things that you've had to deal with, aside from, you know, grandpa and his situation, of course, is, you know, losing our grandmother, and going through that whole process of funeral arrangements and, you know, clearing out her finances and making sure that all of her documents and policies were, you know, transferred over to you. But, you know, can you tell us a little bit, I guess, give everybody the story of what's been going on lately with grandpa and his care and, you know, sort of where we are today with everything.
Okay. So right now, your grandfather is living in an assisted living facility in New Jersey. Mm-hmm. And like all assisted living and nursing homes around the country, they're on 100% quarantine. Normally, I would go and visit with him and spend Sundays with him, you know, every week. We'd sit, we'd have a beer, we'd watch whatever sports were on, just, you know, hang out and be dad and son. But I haven't been able to do that now going into almost 4 months. And, you know, it's like it just changed sort of that dynamic. I buy his, you know, toiletries, daily needs and all that stuff. And I would bring them with me when I would go on Sundays. Well, now I have to mail them because I can't go and take them to him. So, you know, that has been kind of the latest wrinkle in this process. And, you know, but he's doing well. He is happy. You know, they take excellent care of him at this place. And I'm very, very pleased. And, you know, we'll talk more about the facility in a bit. But overall, you know, all things considered, you know, he's in a good spot. So I'm happy. And, you know, I'm blessed to still have him in my life and in you guys' life, you know, and we carry it day by day.
Yeah. And I mean, it's weird because when I was up in New York, I could drive down to New Jersey fairly easily and pop in and say hi and see him or whatever. It was like maybe a 45-minute drive, if that. Mm-hmm. You know, now it's video chat. I had a video chat with him the other day. And it was weird, you know, it was like walking him through the house, which was, I mean, it was nice because at no other time would he ever be able to see where I'm living now that I'm in Savannah. So it was nice to be able to kind of walk him around and show him what was going on. But definitely something lost in translation when you're not there in person with the people. So I think everybody's kind of feeling the effects of connecting but not connecting at the same time. It's this digital connect. You know, you do lose something in translation when you're not physically in the space with people. And I mean, even those folks, I mean, on our side too as well, my mother's father has passed away from COVID, and none of us got to see him. None of us could go visit him, even, you know, before he had passed away. And service wise, you know, none of us were able to have a real service for him just yet because of everything going on. And so I think people are missing really important sections of their lives. And it's really sad to see that this generation is the generation getting hit the hardest because they're the ones, you know, with the history, they're the ones that sort of hold the family together sometimes. And they're the ones that kind of keep things glued toward, like keep everybody sort of glued together in a sense. And so being able or not being able to see them or be around them or have Sunday dinners or breakfast or whatever it is that you had with grandma, grandpa, and then, you know, consequently having them pass away and not being able to say goodbye, you know, there's going to be some psychological, you know, issues.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, my heart goes out to your mom and her brothers and, you know, and that side of the family, you know, because they didn't have that option of being able to do that final, you know, goodbye and final messages and, you know, clearing the air when her mother passed away many years ago. You know, it was important that, you know, the family get that opportunity to have those final conversations. You know, you think of them and you kind of go, well, you know, she knows or he knows, we understand. And you don't realize until they're gone that, you know, I never got a chance to tell her all of the great things that she did. Or, you know, I never got a chance to thank him for, you know, always being, you know, in my corner and so forth. And those things weigh on you. They weigh heavily, you know. So, you know, I guess the first, as I say on my show, the first call to action for, you know, your younger generations is have those conversations. You know, make sure that your loved ones know how much they have meant to you, because once they are gone, those thoughts, those feelings, those emotions will come back on you when you don't expect it. And they're very hard to deal with, you know, and, you know, as we continue and segue, you know, it's about being prepared. And a lot of people, not just the younger generation, a lot of parents, a lot of the older generations, they don't want to talk about those final arrangements. You know, they don't want to talk about that. But it's important that you do, in order to help when that time comes, to help that process through. You know, and you know, I can tell you that, you know, this story with my father actually transitions back, and it was amazing. I was working and pulling together my notes for this, I found a folder that my dad wrote regarding the stroke that my mom had, which kind of was the precipitating event to this long journey that we've been on. And he wrote it all down. He wrote a story of what happened, you know, what the doctors said and all of that. And I read that last night, and it brought just so much back that I really hadn't thought deeply about in a long time, you know, and it brought me back to that week. And she had her stroke in 1994. It was, and it was funny because it was, you know, the day after Thanksgiving, and I had literally been there, you know, for Thanksgiving with them the prior day. I had gone home the night before. I had gone back home up to Massachusetts, and the next day I got a call, you know, from my dad saying my mom had this massive stroke, so I had to turn around and drive back down to New Jersey, you know, to be there for her. And, you know, I had forgotten about just what all of that took me through. And, you know, and really it was kind of the start of rethinking my relationship with my parents, with both of them at that time, changed. Just in that moment when she had that event and the aftermath of that, how my relation with my parents really flipped 180 degrees from, you know, being son to now being caretaker, you know, and it put in process a lot of steps that, you know, needed to be taken. Now, I will say, you know, my mother, probably the wisest woman I have ever known, for someone who, you know, had, you know, a basic education growing up in, you know, the backwoods of Virginia, the grandchildren of slaves, and you know, had basically a trade school education. This woman was wise, wise, wise. She had already put in place a lot of the preparations that were needed. And I can remember sitting down shortly after she had her stroke and, you know, having a 3-hour conversation about what her wishes were. And we'll talk more about that too. But, you know, it changes everything. It changes, you know, how they have to live their life. It changes how you have to live yours. It adds, you know, responsibilities and requirements that are going to impact your life, you know, because now you've got to work in, okay, so I need to have conversations with this. I need to do that. I need to set up this. I need to go over here. So all of these things are going to add complexity into your life that you really need to prepare for. And many people, you know, I'd almost say most people do not prepare. I didn't prepare. I was not prepared for what this journey has taken me through. It's been, you know, a complete education, and there's no handbook, there's no manual, you know, there's no FAQ that can help you do the many things you need to do to take care of your parents. So it's been an interesting journey.
And so one of the things I want to ask you is, I mean, And by and large, I kind of consider you one of the lucky ones, because there are people in that situation who didn't have some of the funds and resources available that, you know, we have had in order to care for grandpa. But what are some of the things that you didn't know, I guess, going into this process? I know that that's like a hard question to answer right off the bat, but I guess if you want to just walk us through like some of the things that you found out as you were going through.
Well, the list of things that I did not know at the start of this process is huge, but really it is just how you need to prepare for what's going to need to be done. And I say that to say, you know, the basic necessities that they are going to need, you know, housing, food, healthcare, you know, transportation, all of those things are going to drastically change. There are requirements, and we get further down, we'll go into a few of those, but you need to prepare their finances for basically, and I should back up and say, it depends on the condition that your parents are in. You know, in the case of my mother, she had her stroke. She had some limited use of her left side, but her mind was totally clear. She could communicate. She just couldn't move around.
Grandma did not play.
I said this at her funeral service. I said, those of you that knew, you know, Miss Pearl well, knew that she was not shy about sharing her opinion. Oh my God, no. But you know, in the real sense, you could have a parent who, you know, has a similar condition, has a stroke, and is confined to a bed. And, you know, so the immediate things are their medical care. Do you need to get, you know, 24-hour, you know, in-home care? Are you going to have a live-in nurse? What about getting them to and from hospital appointments? Does your town have an ambulance service that you can access, or are you going to have to hire an ambulance to take them into the hospital for their routine checkups and follow-ups and so forth? You know, the list just grew and grew and grew and grew of things that I had to respond to in fairly quick order as we progressed through that. And the same thing now, you know, with my father. The list of things that I am working on right now in getting him, you know, into the Medicare, Medicaid portion of his living finances and so forth, that list is just growing, growing, growing every day. Mm-hmm. So the first thing, and I think the first thing you should do, and I say this with all sincerity, don't wait until you have to do it. Do it now. Do it as soon as you can. Sit down with your parent or parents and have what is going to be a difficult conversation, but have that conversation. You're going to need to have them tell you what their wishes are for their life going forward. You know, and it includes some hard choices. You know, one of which early on is, you know, my mother made it very clear, and so has my father, that, you know, they do not wish to be sustained in life by artificial means. So we have set up for her and set up for him what's called a DNR, or a do not resuscitate, so that, you know, if he has, you know, a condition that in order for him to continue leaving, in air quotes, living rather, in air quotes. Sorry, Dad. You know, that order is in place that he does not wish to be kept on life support. And, you know, when my mom said it to me, you know, kind of snapped my head back. And I'm like, Mom, they've got all these machines. Just, I don't want to be on machines. When it's time to go, I'm out. You know, and, you know, so that was one difficult decision and conversation. Also, you know, we talked about, you know, how and where she wanted to be cared for. She was adamant that she wanted to be home.
Yeah.
As her physical condition, you know, worsened over the years, we looked into having her go to an assisted living facility. And in fact, I took her to the one where my father is now, and she absolutely freaked out and, you know, just went berserk. She wanted to be home. So as the child or children, you are going to need to work with your parents. Okay, what are your wishes? What do you want me to do or us to do to take care of you? And listen to it, write it down, you know, make it formal so that it's understood that if, you know, if she or he, you know, is no longer mobile, you know, then we look at getting care in the home that includes hospital level bedding and so forth. You know, I mean, I installed a stair lift in the house because, as you recall, the house they lived in New Jersey, in Montclair, was two levels. Well, my mom really struggled getting up and down the stairs, and it got worse as she got further along in her illness with the stroke. So, you know, at one point, I just said, that's it. And, you know, I had a stair lift installed. Back up one half step. The other thing you need to do is you need to work with them, because this is critical, is to get a general power of attorney for your parent or parents. You should have one for each of them. And in the case of you and your brother and sister, you know, you each may need to have powers of attorney over me in case, you know, you're short one on your team. You know, you guys are grown up. Nobody knows, you know, what the future holds, you know, and you know this as well as anybody. So that care, that ability to handle the affairs, or in your case, to handle my affairs, needs to be able to pass from you to your brother, to your sister, and vice versa as need be. Or, you know, you could be away and a decision needs to be made. Money needs to be transferred from an account to pay a bill, whatever. So if you have that power of attorney, you have the ability to manage their finances. That's a crucial first step. And they need to understand that just because you have literally control over their life doesn't mean you're going to exercise it. But it does mean that you have the ability to step in if they're not able to handle it and do what needs to be done.
If you don't have power of attorney over your parents, you know, finances and things like that, and something happens to them, what are the steps after that? You know, like, what happens if you don't have this paperwork in place is what I mean.
Well, what would happen in general, and I mean, it varies state by state, but what would happen in general is the state, and you know, so let's say if we're talking, you know, my mom and dad, the state of New Jersey would appoint a guardian for them. Basically, the state would appoint somebody with the power to handle their affairs, even though you are their child. You know, if they cannot execute a power of attorney with you, the state is going to step in and become the lead agency in their care. And the state is not, you know, they're not part of the family, so they don't know what mom and dad wanted. They don't know, you know, what needs to happen. They're going to make broad, general, best case decisions. You know, they may, you know, move them into a nursing home and sell their house. They may, you know, liquidate bank accounts, cash in insurance policies to pay for medical expenses and so forth, without consideration of the wishes of the family. And again, this varies, you know, depending on where you are in the country. So you absolutely want to communicate with, you know, an attorney and a financial planner that are experienced in these kinds of matters so that you know what it is that you have to do. And there are resources on the internet that can help you. They can give you general guidance on the things that you need to do. You know, you need to get a power of attorney. You're going to need to, you know, set up signatory authorities in their bank accounts and their financial accounts. You're going to need to, you know, provide your power of attorney to their insurance companies, to their investment companies, anywhere that are aspects of their life that they control. You are going to need to make sure that that entity recognizes your power of attorney so that they will deal with you when the time comes or when the need arises as if they were dealing with mom and dad.
Okay. And then I guess so one of the other questions that we all want to know is, okay, so we know what some critical first steps are for us to be taken care of as the mm-hmm. children. What should the parents be doing to help facilitate all this? You know, like what are some steps that maybe you and mom should be taking care of for us, you know, to make it easier for us when this time does come?
It's an interesting question because in going through this process, it actually has reminded me and encouraged me to go through and get my own house in order, you know, in terms of some things are very, very simple and basic. You should have, you know, your parents should, first of all, they need to understand that you're doing this for them. You know, it's not that you're trying to take over their lives. It's not that you're trying to steal from them, rob from them, whatever. You are doing this to make this phase of their life as easy as possible. So one of the things that parents should do is gather all of their important paperwork together in a secure location and let your child or children know where it is so that they can go get it. You know, fortunately, my mom and dad had the foresight. They had a safe deposit box. I knew where the key was in their house. I knew where, you know, some of the important documents were. And yeah, funny story coming on that one. So, you know, when time came for me to go and do things, and I knew where to get the key to the safe deposit box. I knew where the insurance papers were. I knew, you know, a list of their financial and investment items were and so forth. So that's key, is to make sure you know where all the important paperwork, particularly things like a will. You know, so one of the questions in that conversation with your parents is, you know, mom, dad, do you guys have wills? If they don't, then you need to work with them while they are, you know, able and cogent to make informed decisions in setting up a will. And, you know, it can be something just as simple that just says who they appoint as executor and that all of their, you know, the executor's directed to take care of all their debts and so forth and so on. Or mm-hmm. if you have a more complicated estate, then, you know, you need to set up distribution clauses, who's going to get what, if there's property, who's going to get the house, who's going to get the car, who gets the PlayStation, you know, all of these kind of things. You really have to be as detail focused. And again, there are resources online that can help you. And of course, you know, a financial planner and attorney are invaluable in helping you set up a will that makes sure that your parents' wishes get activated at the proper time. If a person dies without a will, and this is important to know, particularly, you know, for you young people who believe you're indestructible, If you die without a will, the state takes over your estate and they decide where assets go, who gets what, and that may not be in alignment with your wishes. You know, you and one of your siblings maybe, you know, had a huge falling out and you're not talking. You basically disowned each other. The state's going to come in and still give them their share of the estate, even though mom and dad may have not wanted it. So the will, like the power of attorney, are two key documents that determine how the transfer of assets and wealth and so forth in the family, how that's going to happen. And those two documents are very important. So, you know, part of that conversation is, all right, so you guys haven't done a will. Okay, I'm going to get someone. We're going to work with you. We're going to have wills drawn up for both of you. You need to identify where these important documents are and make sure that the people who are going to handle them, you know, your power of attorney and your executor or executrix, have access to them or know, you know, or have copies of them or know where, you know, the key to the safe deposit box is kept, which bank it's at, and so forth. You know, it is, as I said, it is a lengthy list of things that you're going to need to do. And the best way is just to take them one step at a time. So.
Okay. And so with your situation, you know, we've kind of gone over now, you know, the power of attorney, your assets, you know, your will, and what parents should be doing to make it easier for kids, what kids should be doing to be prepared for the situation. I think one of the questions that folks want to know, because not everybody has the fortunate, you know, I guess, fortuitiveness or whatever you want to call it, to have, you know, a house to sell or, you know, insurance money put aside or mm-hmm. bonds or anything like that to help finance some of these things that need to happen once your parents are now needing care. So at what point, because Medicaid and Medicare are, you know, available in the United States, but at what point does Medicaid step in and take over? You know, where does Social Security come into play on this kind of stuff and insurance? You know, like, what are the levels of coverage that these different options give us in terms of helping care for our parents?
That's a great question. Really, really great question. I'm going to throw a little background behind it to just kind of paint this picture. In the case with my father, mm-hmm. the cost of his assisted living is in excess of $9,000 a month.
And this is not the Waldorf, ladies and gentlemen.
No, it is not. You know, and he is getting care at, you know, a relatively low level because he's still able, you know, to get himself dressed in the morning, you know, and so forth. If he needed more intensive care, that figure could easily triple. You know, so young people out there, understand something. If you have to put your parents in assisted living or in a nursing home, it's going to cost. It's going to cost anywhere from, you know, nationally, the averages are anywhere from $2,000 to, you know, $12,000 just for basic living care. You know, if it's more intensive, it's going to be.
As you're at your, was it activities of daily living? As those diminish, right. The cost goes higher.
The cost goes higher. So, you know, understand that one of the things you're doing in as you're working, you know, toward this is you're setting up so that you have the ability to create the pool of money that's going to be needed to take care of your loved ones in a nursing home or in an assisted living facility or even at care for home, which can run, you know, $2,000 to $3,000 a month, depending upon level of care and amount of hours. You know, you have to kind of know what direction you're heading in and prepare for that. So to get back to your question, Medicare and Medicaid, particularly for people over the age of 65, generally covers the lion's share of their health costs, hospitalization costs. In most cases, prescription cost is covered under Medicare. Medicare is a federal program. It is run by the United States government, and it's pretty well defined. You can go online and look at, you know, all different resources on Medicare. There are four parts to it, part A, B, C, and D, and it clearly determines what they cover and so forth. Most people who have hit retirement age are automatically enrolled in at least A, B, and C parts of Medicare. Now, Medicaid, on the other hand, is a joint program between the federal government and your state government, but it is run by the state. And this covers more major medical expenses, specific services, and prescription drug coverage, which vary by state, but it covers a laundry list of things. So, you know, to give you a couple of them, inpatient and outpatient hospital services, screening and diagnostics, nursing facility care, which is, you know, what we're talking about here, home health care. So if you have a home health aide coming in to work with your mom or your dad, you know, on a daily basis, Medicaid can step in and cover that, you know, and a whole, just a whole list of other programs. Again, the easiest way is to go online and search for Medicare versus Medicaid. And there are, you know, bunches of websites that will give you the answers. But there are requirements that you have to have in place for Medicaid in particular, but for Medicare too. Some of them are income guidelines you may not be eligible for some parts of Medicare if you are still working. You definitely will not be eligible for Medicaid living expenses if you own a home, if you have, investment accounts, if you own stock and so forth. One of the requirements and one of the things that's been a huge battle for me over the last couple of months now is getting my dad financially prepared to be covered under Medicare. And one of the first things they tell you is, essentially, you got to be broke.
Broke.
You can't have a house down in the Hamptons and be on Medicaid. Essentially, your asset pool cannot be worth more than $2,000. Let that sink in.
So that's not like $2,000 a month. That's like $2,000 overall.
Yeah. And in addition to that, you can't have more than $2,000 a month in income. So the driver is, if the government's going to pay for you to live in these expensive nursing homes and so forth, they're going to make sure that, you actually need to be helped. Years ago, there was a requirement as part of what's called the spend down. Or the asset consumption, that you could simply transfer your assets to one of your children, sell the kids the house for a dollar, transfer the deed so it's no longer yours, and you would qualify. Well, they closed that loophole probably 10 years ago. So now it is much more critically looked at. To give you an example, I had to provide Medicaid with 5 years of my father's or 5 years of their bank records going back to when my mother was still alive, and be prepared to explain any unusual transfers and so forth. I had to give them 3 years of all of their investment history, so there's a lot of detail that Medicaid will go through with a fine-tooth comb, and there can be consequences. So, you have to work in advance knowing that this is a possibility. You kind of need to set up all of this stuff so that it's easily available when you need it. Now, the hard part is, it's not like there's something out there that says, well, by, June 30th of, 2026, you're going to absolutely need all this stuff. We're not promised how many days we're here. So, if you're preparing to transfer assets to pay for assisted living, one of the questions is, how much retirement money do you have and how long will that cover you? It is a reality for me now, and I'm blessed that my dad is still with me. I'm thankful every day that I can talk to him on the phone, or that I can, video chat with him, or that I can go when they reopen things and get back to going on Sundays and watching golf and drinking a beer with my dad. Those are treasures. But at some point that is, that's going to end. He's 97 years old, which is amazing. But, I joke with him and say, yeah, you can live to be 1,000. But the reality is, there's a finite number of days. And so I say that to say, you have to prepare for the things and have them ready on the shelf, so that when the time comes for elevated medical care, or increased hospitalization, or moving from just a normal nursing home to an Alzheimer's unit, or an assisted living facility, that you don't have to frantically go forward and try and get all these things together, because it takes time.
Yeah.
And same thing, truthfully, with funeral arrangements. As I said, my mother and I had a long conversation, and you know, I asked her very, you know, very pointedly, you know, Mom, how do you want your funeral handled? And true to your grandmother, she had a whole list. Well, I want this kind, you know, I don't want no metal box. I want wood. She had all the ABCDs laid out. And looking back on it, I was so thankful to her that she had thought it through that deeply, because it literally took me a week to prepare her funeral arrangements. And, you know, I had help. You guys helped. Your mom helped. You know, I had a few family members that helped out and so forth. But most of that was on me. I stayed at that house for, you know, almost 2 weeks, and, you know, just got everything together. But because we had had that talk, because I had a document that said, you know, that gave the funeral director all the information they needed, that, you know, had that they were able to write a beautiful obituary based on the information that was contained in those documents and so on and so forth. It took a lot of pressure off of me. Now, you know, obviously, you know, I lost my mom, you know, and, you know, had to lay her to rest, but it really took a lot of the pressure that I know is out there when people go through this. And I've seen it, you know, in our family and in, you know, other families and so forth, where people aren't prepared and everybody's running around like crazy going, oh my God, we got to get this, we got to get that, where are we going to bury them, you know, and so on and so forth. We were able to plan all of that out so that it really was just, okay, calling up, you know, the funeral home and arranging for the location and going to see and picking out and so on and so forth. So again, it goes back to, as difficult as it is and as painful as it can be and as weird as it will feel, you really need to go through it and get it done, because I can tell you from experience that when that time comes and you have, you know, a folder or you have a file on your computer or whatever record that says, okay, you know, your grandfather was, he was a veteran. He was honorably discharged from the U.S. Army. So we'll need to set up, you know, military honors at his funeral. You know, how do they want to be taken care of? Do they want to be buried? Do they want to be cremated? You know, and so forth. So that all of his wishes are all laid out. I know what he wants me to do. I knew then what she wanted me to do. And it takes what is already a stressful time. It just takes all that extra stress off of it. You know, and like I said, my heart goes out to your mom, because I know that there's a whole list of pieces to that, that because of the circumstance of your grandfather's death,
yeah,
we can't do. You know, there is no funeral service. There is no place for the family to say their goodbyes. Now, you know, yeah, can do it later on, but it's not the same.
Yeah.
You know, that moment is lost. So,
well, while we're on this topic of grandma and, you know, how she was, you promised us a funny story about work. So, you know, I figure now let's transition a little bit and tell that funny story and let the audience have a little bit of a laugh.
So, as I said, Opinion and my mother were close partners. My mom would, as some people say, routinely put it where the goats get it. So if she did not agree with something or she had an opinion about something, she would tell you straightforward, no holds barred. Yep. And, you know, we had very honest conversations, but one of them that really kind of struck me was on a couple of occasions, especially, you know, as she got more toward the end of her life. She had her stroke and she bore through that for 20 years. And then, you know, she got a cancer, which she beat back once, and then it came back with a vengeance. And the idea of treatment at her age was not practical. So it really was that kind of end of life moment. And, you know, in the final weeks, I spent a lot of time in the house with her, and we'd have conversations, you know, and talk. And she would say, you know, the running joke was she would say to me, you know, every night, because I would come down, I would spend the day, and then I would come back home because I had, you know, things to do and so forth. But I would then come back, you know, the next day or the day after. And she would say, you know I'm going to die. And I would look at her and I'd smile and I'd say something I heard in a commercial on TV. And I would go, yeah, well, you know, I don't lie to you, Mom. And yeah, there's nothing they can do, but I can tell you this, it's not going to be tonight. And that's what I would say to her every night. And, you know, at one point she looked at me and she said, you're going to tell me it's not going to be tonight, right? And I'm like, pretty much. Okay. Okay. Get it off your chest. I know. What do you really think? And I'm like, I think it's not going to be tonight. And she would go back and forth, and she was feisty about it. And I'd invariably, you know, I'd kiss her goodnight and, you know, tuck her into bed and then, you know, say goodnight to my dad. And then I'd head back home. And, you know, I'm driving and I'm like going, this woman, she, you know, time's short. And all she's got to do is, the best she's got is to fuss with me. Okay. Okay. So, I mean, I carry that, you know, she approached life full speed, you know, and, you know, my dad is not quite as full speed as Mom is, but, you know, he's a very set in motion kind of guy. You know, we talk as well, and he's, you know, he understands that, you know, he's 97 years old. I mean, he lost his sister, your Aunt Joan, at 97. You know, his wife was 97 when she passed away. So he knows that 97 may be a magic number. But,
oh, boy.
And I know, hey, I know it sounds irreverent to say that. But the other thing is, I think one of the things we do is we tend to have this stigma about talking about death like it is this, you know, evil boogeyman, or that if we say the word that we're going to incur, you know, this, it is a natural progression of what we go through, you know, in our lives, you know. And at my age, you know, it's like, I'm not afraid, you know. I have a great life. I'm living, you know, the best life I can under the Rona lockdown,
COVID circumstances,
under the quarantine circumstances that we've got now. But, you know, I'm a blessed individual. I've got some great blessings in my life, and, you know, I'm talking with one of them, and, you know, and I have two others, you know, of my children, and three more with Millie and her children. You know, I've done a lot of great things, so I have no regrets. There are things I still would like to do, but, you know, I'm not afraid should that time come. You know,
that time should not come.
No, I'm not saying that I want this time to come, but I say that to say, you know, we have this kind of boogeyman thing. Ooh, don't talk about death, you know. We do need to talk about it, you know, and as we're having in this conversation, there are things we need to do to prepare, you know, for that transition, including making sure that we are not leaving, you know, a tremendous burden on those who remain behind, you know. So, as I said, I've learned in going through this process with my parents that there are things that I need to get my house in order about, you know, making sure that my will is up to date and current with my wishes, making sure that, you know, there is, you know,
leave it all to me, leave everything to me. I got it.
So my phone's going to start ringing now from your siblings going, no, we didn't have a meeting on this. but, and you know, and that's the thing, you know, it is part of life. We need to deal with it like we deal with everything else that we have to do that may not be comfortable, but we have to do it. The thing, you know, I don't want is to leave you guys with, you know, a whole laundry list of things to do because, you know, like realities. You're in Georgia, your brother and sister in Massachusetts. I live in Pennsylvania. You know, that's a whole lot of things that have to come into place. And to that regard, you know, it's like the burial arrangements for me and for Millie, we've taken care of that. So you don't have to find a place and, you know, and all of that. We did all that. And all of those papers are in a secure location in the safe and so forth. And, you know, all of that will be packaged and given to each of you so that you each have copies of it so that should something happen, you guys can come together and fight it out.
So mm-hmm. Last question I have for you before the end of the show here. And there is something else I want to mention that we could talk about at the end here. But so if you had to go through this process again with Grandpa, starting from scratch, starting from the beginning, what is something that you would have done differently? You know, what are some things you would have
changed? Well, see, the difficulty with that question, and I know we kind of talked about it in the preset for the show. The difficulty with that question is it's dependent on circumstances. You know, if I had a crystal ball that, you know, said this would come, you know, there are some things I would have done differently in terms of how I arranged his financing, you know, particularly if I knew that he would come to having to require Medicaid. That changed a whole lot of objectives because I didn't know what Medicaid is going to require be in place. So, you know, a little better structure in the finances would be one thing. And, you know, maybe a different approach in where I placed him in terms of, you know, assisted living. But that's all those, you know, shoulda, oughta, woulda kind of things that you can't really prepare for. Yeah. So, you know, what I learned out of this is there are, you know, macro things and micro things. Handle the macro stuff, you know, the will, the power of attorney, you know, identifying the assets and all of that. Get all that organized. And the micro things you're just going to have to deal with.
So the last thing I wanted to mention before we close out the show here, aside from giving you a moment to shout out your contact information and all that good stuff, of course, is this idea that I saw online that I think is really cool. And I'm going to sign you guys up for it. And it's called Storyworth. I saw an ad for this on TV, Facebook, somewhere. My phone was probably listening to me and sent me an ad for it or whatever. But in any case, it's called Storyworth. And what they do is you sign up for it and you put in your parents' emails. And every week they send you a question that like we would never think to ask, you know, like what's your best memory of us or whatever. And you answer that question. And then at the end of the time that you allot for, they send it, they bind it into a book. And they send it to you. So you mm-hmm. have it. And it's like a really nice keepsake of things that like stories that you may not have heard about, you know, things you may not have thought about, but it's just a really nice keepsake. And I think that what I'm going to do is try to get you and Mom into that, because I think it would be something that would be really a treasure for me, Nikki and Steven down the line to see that book and see those memories and maybe walk down some of those memories that we may remember too. But I always, when we started this conversation about having this talk with each other, I was like, you know, it would have been really great if this had been around when grandma and grandpa were when grandma was around, because mm-hmm. like, you know, we could have really had some laughs. I'm sure she would have shared some stories in there that would have had us in stitches.
And I know I've talked about this with all three of you, something that, you know, to realize, you know, your grandmother lived for 97 years. She was born in 1918. And her parents were among the individuals, you know, since we're talking, we just went through Juneteenth. Her parents were your great grandmother and grandfather were freed by the Emancipation Proclamation. They are the children. They were the children of slaves. And, you know, she grew up deep in the heart of Virginia, and the stories that she told me were just a few, but the things that she could have told you guys would really, really have, I think, been great for you to hear. You know, and same thing with my dad. He's, you know, he was born in England. So there are all kinds of stories that, yeah, you need to get. So young people, go spend some time with grandma and grandpa. And if you're so blessed with great grandma and great grandpa, and sit down and have them tell you how stories of when they were growing up. Look at the things that they've seen. You know, they've gone, they may be, you know, my mother grew up in an age where there wasn't a telephone, never mind an internet, you know, and just find those family treasures and take note of them. You know, I know there are families out there that do these and they videotape them and it becomes a similar type of archive where, you know, they get, you know, grandma, grandpa, uncles, aunts, and so forth to tell their stories, and they video them so that it becomes that family history.
I think it's a beautiful thing, honestly. And I wish that I had had that opportunity to chat with grandma before she passed and really do all that kind of stuff. So that's definitely a
I can tell you without equivocation that one, she was proud of all three of you, but she looked at you as something of a kindred spirit because, like you, she was a very independent woman. You know, I've joked and said that she was in, you know, women's liberation before Betty Friedan even thought of it. She, you know, as I said, she was a woman of strong opinion. She was a woman of conviction and courage, and again, one of the wisest women I've ever had the honor to meet. And, you know, I see a lot of you in her, or a lot of her in you.
I know what you meant. Yeah. Well, then I guess I'm doing something right.
You're following in, and your brother and sister too, in their own ways. They're following in a great tradition and legacy, you know, and, you know, don't stop that, you know, speak your mind.
I'm here. I'm not going anywhere.
I know.
On that note, you know, I want to thank you for taking the time to share with us this journey that you've gone through with grandpa and with grandma and all the stuff that you've had to put in to just keep him in a comfortable living situation. I think all the information you shared is going to be super valuable for my generation to be hearing, because we need to start paying attention to this kind of stuff. But one thing I do want to say is shout out your contact information, your show, and all that good stuff. And where can people find you and follow you?
So I'm not only honored to be, you know, the father of the CEO of the company, I'm also a show host. Mondays at 5:30 Eastern, I host a show called Fire It Up. It is the WJMS political podcast show. Here I talk about the system, not the people. And, you know, all of the madness going on has just made for some really interesting shows. I can be reached through the show at firedupradio@yahoo.com for email. My Twitter is @RUFiredUp. That's A-R-E, the letter U, Fired Up on Twitter. And the Facebook page is facebook.com/FiredUpRadio. So quickly, I've got a quick survey out, replies to the email address. Should we or should we not rehire the current leadership in this country to a second term, or, you know, give them their jobs back? Send your answers to firedupradio.com, and I'll be going through them starting on next Monday's show.
Is that a rhetorical question or?
No, it is. And I want Democrat, I want Republican, conservative, you know, just don't send me, you know, because he's making America great again. Don't give me the standard line. Give me the facts. Why should we give the president a second term? Why should we give the senators who are up for election, Democrat and Republican, a second term, given how they have governed our country in the last 3 years? If we made the kind of mistakes in our jobs that they have done, or said the kind of things, or done the kind of things, our companies would have very politely but very quickly said, yo, Steve, get to stepping. We'd be fired. So I'm saying, why should we fire them or should we keep them? And facts only answers, firedupradio@yahoo.com.
All right. And of course, folks, if you want to hear any of the shows that he's put on, they're really, really wonderful topics. You can check out iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and Spotify. All of his content is up there for streaming on demand. So make sure you check it out. Give it a like and a subscribe if you could, because it means the world to us. And if you want to follow the radio station, you can check out WJMS Radio on Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, and Twitter. I am at @just_jams on Instagram and Jamie Jam on Facebook. So you can check me out there as well. We'll be back again with another brand new episode of Sound Off next week. I appreciate you so much for being on the show today, Dad. Thank you so much for kicking knowledge like you always do. It's always a note-taking episode.
I appreciate the opportunity to talk with you and as always. And just, you know, folks, I am so proud of this young lady and what she's doing, what she's done, what she's accomplished. You know, it's tremendous to watch and even tremendous to participate in. So thank you, sweetheart.
All right. So guys, we'll be back next week with another brand new episode. Until then, everybody stay safe, wash those hands, and thank you for tuning in to Sound Off right here on WJMS Radio.
When I was a child, before life removed all the innocence, my father would lift me high and dance with my mother and me, and then spin me around till I fell asleep. Then up stairs he would carry me, and I knew for sure I was loved. If I could get another chance, another walk, another dance with him, I'd play a song that would never ever end. How I'd love, love, to dance with my father again. Ooh. When I and my mother would disagree, to get my way I would run from her to him. He'd make just to comfort me, yeah, yeah. Then finally make me do just what my mama said. Later that night when I was asleep, he left a dollar under my sheet. Never dreamed that he would be gone from me. If I final glance, one final step, one final dance with him, I'd play a song that would never ever end. 'Cause I'd love, love, love to dance with my father again. Sometimes I'd listen outside her door, and I'd hear how my mother cried for him. I'd pray for her even more than me. I'd pray for her even more than me. She loved. I know you don't do it to you.
dying to dance with my father again. Every night I fall asleep, and this is all I ever dream.
WJMS Radio.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. Far too kind.
See, we keep it real. We always gonna keep it real. You can't knock what's real, you know what I'm saying? We telling the truth, man.